I've never felt so inadequate in terms of trying to preach on a subject. Because it's a bit like diving into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and thinking, how deep is this? So I want you just to try and forget everything you know about love and let God speak to you about a different kind of love. Let's go to the next one, Steve. Some of you know I like to kind of add a bit of teaching, a bit of meat. And so we've touched on the left-hand side a few times that creation tells you that God exists. So there are various ways you can look at the world and say, God exists. And that's what theologians call general revelation. But that just tells you God's there. It doesn't tell you anything about what this God is like. It doesn't tell you, you know, is he male, female, one, two, three. It just doesn't tell you. So we need a special revelation of what God is like. And we see that in the Bible. God reveals himself. He says, this is what I am like. And supremely, he reveals himself in Jesus, who says, I am God. And that's where we're going today. We're going to look at that supreme revelation of what God is like. But I'm going to start with what God is not like. So we jump to the next one, Steve. There's a kind of idea, if you get to a point of saying, God exists, there is a creator, what you end up with is this, the idea of, well, there is a God. I don't know if you've ever read this book, but there's a book here by C.S. Lewis called The Great Divorce. C.S. Lewis imagines taking a trip to heaven and hell. And he starts in hell, and you see the bus has got a little label on the top saying heaven, and the flames are coming out because it's coming out of hell. But what he pictures hell like is everybody in total isolation. And it's an ever-expanding place because everyone's trying to get away from everybody else. And it's that sense that you are completely alone. You ever thought about prison as a punishment? People get put into what? Solitary confinement. Because you're putting people in isolation away from everybody else, you're saying you're all alone. Now just imagine that God is one, that there is no Trinity, that there is just one God. What is this God like? Well, it's a bit like C.S. Lewis's picture of hell. He's all alone. He has no one to love. Kind of depressing picture in a way. You just think, what? Who does he love? And if he does love, why would he create anything? Jump on to the next one. There's a guy called Christopher Hitchens. He's an atheist. He was an atheist, I should say. He described himself as an anti-theist. All right? The reason he said was, an atheist is someone who believes God does not exist, but is open to the idea that if there was proof, I could be persuaded that God exists. Hitchens says, no, the idea of God is so horrible that I am against any idea of God. I just think it's the most horrible idea ever. Why does he say that? Why is he so against the idea of God? Well, anyone heard of IS lately? Okay, a couple of us. Anyone else heard of IS lately, right? What Hitchens says is, if you believe in a God who is a kind of supreme ruler, a heavenly Hitler, a despot, a dictator, then what you get is, I'm just subservient. I'm ruled by this rather horrible person in the sky. And what happens is, Anyone who follows that kind of God believes they need to be like him. He sets a set of rules. He gives rules that you must obey. And if you don't, well, you deserve to have your head cut off. We become like, as Duncan said this morning, what we worship. Is God a single person, a heavenly despot, a heavenly Hitler? Just horrible. Why am I taking you down this? Because we believe in a God of love. Well, how much do we still have this picture of this kind of heavenly headmaster who doesn't really like us in our own heads? Do you ever think, actually, maybe God doesn't like me? The picture on the right, it's easy to pick on IS and say they're nasty, but you know, on the picture on the right, they're apparently Christians. They would call themselves Christians. Going out with slogans saying, God hates you. Oh. Problem is that people think that Christianity is about lifestyle, about rules and things, but it isn't. It's about knowing God. It's about knowing and enjoying him. And when you know that love, that will make you loving. That changes you. So when I said try and forget everything, here's a side of, just think how much of your picture of God is still this heavenly Hitler. Or your dad was a bit harsh. You know, I have three kids and I just think, Lord, I'm sorry, I didn't do such a good job. Any dads in the house want to kind of wave their hands and go, sometimes we get it wrong? Oh, there's a couple of us being honest. We don't get it right. And we have to, if we could get a mind wipe, anyone seen Men in Black? And there's that little pen, he comes out with that pen thing, whatever he calls it, and he flashes a flashy thing, as Will Smith calls it, and you get a mind wipe. I kind of wish I could give my kids or us a mind wipe and say, I want to relearn everything about God because actually I've not got it right. The God we worship is a Trinity. And why is that important? Because a God who is a Trinity has somebody to love. The Father loves the Son. The Son loves the Spirit. The Son loves the Father. The Spirit loves the Father. There's this eternal relationship ever since. Well, actually, there never was a time they weren't there. They have always been in a relationship of love. Love everlasting. Love for you and me that never had a beginning because they never had a beginning. You're not getting this. You should start to feel a little bit excited that there is a God in heaven who is love. He isn't a despot. What is your God like in your mind? Duncan mentioned last week the book, The Good God. I don't think we've actually got it on the book table, but if you haven't got it and you like reading a bit, get it and read it because it really will impact you. So I'm going to quote quite a bit from it. He says, God has always enjoyed showering his love on his Son. And in creating, he created you and me. That is an overflow of his love. Love is not kind of a mood that God gets into. It is who he is. It's his essence. It's his nature. Jump on, Steve. Sorry. God, in John 17, Jesus prays to the Father. And as he prays to the Father, he says things like this: Father, glorify me in your presence with the glory I had before the world began. What he's saying is, I've always been glorified by God the Father. I've always been there. I've always been in your presence. The Father and the Son were always together. They always loved one another. That is totally different. That is a love that is wonderful. In verse 24, he says, you loved me before the creation of the world. God's love is what causes him to create. He loves, and that's what drives creation. He goes on. Jump to the next one, Steve. Jesus then goes on and he has this amazing thing. He says, my prayer is that all of them, and he's talking about all the disciples, he's talking about you and me, everyone, maybe one, just as you and I are one, just as you're in me and I'm in you, that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. Why have I got this picture on the right? Have you seen this? Have you ever seen this done? Stack of champagne glasses, and they're all there. And anyone have this at their wedding? Okay. Right. You get a stack of champagne glasses, and you start building them from the bottom and upwards. And apologies, it looks a bit blurred there. But someone pours champagne in the top. And then it overflows to the next lot, and the next lot, and the next lot. And it just creates this wonderful cascade. And that's a picture of the love. The Father pours the love that he has had for eternity into the Son and the Spirit. And they pour their love into the church, into you and me. You want some of that love this morning? A bit of love? Pete, you want a bit of love this morning? You want a bit of love? It's this cascading love that God wants to share. He made you for love. You're still not very excited about it. I'm like, you were made for love. And I'm like, well, okay, whatever. I feel like saying, do you want to stand up, turn around five times and sit down again? Because I know it's warm in here, guys. But this is just amazing. You were made for love. You weren't made for a set of rules. You were made to be loved. You were made to experience his love. Big question. What is that love like? Jump on, Steve. In the world, or in Greek, there are four words for love. Chris is at the back. He'll correct me if I get it wrong. There are three, and Dave touched on this a few weeks ago when he was preaching on Peter. And there are three earthly loves. Storge, which is kind of a family love. Philia, which is kind of friendship, and Eros, which is what everyone gets excited about because that's a passion that drives men and women to get together and have families. And then there's agape. This was what the Greeks thought of as a spiritual love. It was the highest love. It is God's love. It is unconditional. Go on, Steve. So when we say, when I was trying to get you to forget about love, when we're in families, things don't go right. Our brothers and sisters say things that hurt us. Our friends let us down. Sometimes our spouses let us down. I know I let my wife down. Right? But God is always there. He never lets us down. So what is his love like? 1 John 4:8 says, God is love. That is who he is. His love is unconditional. 1 John 4:10, this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us. Romans 5, while we were still sinners, while we were still bad, while we still did everything wrong, God, Jesus Christ, died for us. It's a giving love. John 3:16, God so loved the world that he Well, somebody else did it. He gave. Next week, you've got a chance to be like God. He is everlasting. Jeremiah 31:3. I have loved you with an everlasting love. What it means is there was never a time you weren't loved. Ever, anyone ever felt unloved? Well, you're getting a few more honest people. Now, come on. Have you ever felt unloved? Every hand should be up. I'm sorry. But if you're honest, there is every one of us at times have felt unloved. But God says, no, I always loved you. And then there's parental love. Psalm 103:13 says, as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. And 1 John 3:1, see the great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. There's just sermons after sermons in each of these. But you're a child of God. You've been adopted. You've been loved from before the creation of the world. That should make you a little bit excited. It should make you feel a little bit better. Perhaps the greatest love, the greatest sign of his love, was Christ's sacrifice. John 10:18, Jesus said, I lay down my life. 1 John 3:16 says the same thing. Jesus chose to lay down his life for you and me. Is that a kind of love that's special? Charles Dickens wrote a story, a famous story. Jump to the next one, Steve. Called A Tale of Two Cities. Anyone ever read it? A few have read it. Set in the French Revolution, and it's a tale that's not very nice, but there is a key point in it. There are two men, Sidney Carton and Charles Darnay, and they both love the same woman, this woman, Lucy Manette. But they have a remarkable similarity. They look very similar. And cut a longish story short, Darnay is threatened. He is in prison and facing the guillotine. He will die. And Carton goes in and he swaps places with Darnay. And Darnay is released and goes free. And Carton goes to the guillotine in his place. Why does he do it? He does it for the love of Lucy. He loves Lucy. Parallel's kind of obvious. You and I deserve death. But God so loved the world that he went to the cross. And he took our place. I guess the difference between the Tale of Two Cities is it's not that he has ever done anything wrong. He doesn't deserve to die. But he loves, and it's love that sent him to the cross. People say, was it the Father who sent Jesus to the cross? Was it the Romans who killed him? Was it the Jews who killed him? Was it nails that held him there? Well, he says he could command legions of angels. So he wasn't staying there because of fear. He wasn't hanging on the cross because, well, I can't, you know, I haven't really got a choice. He was God incarnate. He could have called down angels at any moment. But his love held him there. His love for you and me. His love for us. There's that moment on the cross, one moment in time when father and son are separated, and he cries out, what? My God, why have you forsaken me? You got to try and get your mind around this. The father and son have been in fellowship forever, for eternity. And at one moment, there is separation. And that one moment is when our sin was laid on him. What on earth or in heaven could cause him to stay there? That was our sin laid on him. The sacrifice for once, for all humanity. And what held him there? Love for you and me. Love for you and me. Just an overwhelming love. I just want to finish by looking at two people. One is Martin Luther. So Martin Luther, I don't know if you know, but he was a monk. He was a Roman Catholic monk. And he struggled to get right with God. He was taught, you must do this rule and this rule and do that. And he talked about sleeping naked on a cold stone floor because he thought that would get him close to God. And he would fast and he would do all sorts of things to get close to God. And he says this, I did not love. Yes, actually, I hated the righteous God who punishes sinners. And secretly, if not blasphemously, certainly murmuring greatly, I was angry with God. Ever feel like that? See, if you think, like Luther, it's all a set of rules. I have to do all these things to get close to God. If that's how your life is, you're going to get angry. And it's almost as if that anger is a short step before you say, well, this other person's an infidel, so I'll cut their head off. But Luther went on. Because Luther discovered grace. He discovered the love of God. He said, it is not enough to know God as creator and judge. Only when God is known as a loving father is he known aright. His sheer, inexpressible love. Do you know God as your father? And I don't care if you think you've been a Christian for 50 years. Do you know him as father? Or is he still a bit of a remote, far-off judge? Next one, Steve. I have a quote from J.I. Packer. It's a book that's been around for a long time. If you've not read it, it's called Knowing God. And he made this statement. If you want to judge how well a person understands Christianity, find out how much he makes of the thought of being God's child and having God as his father. If this is not the whole thought that prompts and controls his worship and prayers and his whole outlook on life, it means he does not understand Christianity very well at all. I ask, how much do we understand Christianity? How much do you value being a child of God? Honest question. Is it the most precious thing? I was once asked by someone, we talked about Sozo, but a kind of prayer ministry session, someone said to me, how do you see yourself with God? And I said, I'm a bit like a toddler, a bit like Ariella, kind of Ariella's age, she's not here, but holding the hand of my daddy. A toddler is dependent on his daddy or mummy. And I know we struggle sometimes. Our dads aren't always perfect. Grasp this. This is, you are dependent on daddy, but daddy loves you. He's not some harsh judge. He gave his son for you. That should excite you. It should make you feel at least a little warm inside, even though it's warm outside. He loves you. Do you get that? Yeah? No? God didn't make you to be a servant. He didn't make you to give you lots of rules. He didn't make you to beat you up. He made you for freedom. God wants to fill each of us and make us like him. He wants sons and daughters who love him. He wants to give out. He wants to flow out into us. He wants you to burst out. He wants you to know that you're not only a son, but you're an heir with him in the heavenly places. Let's just pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that we are your children. That you aren't remote and despotic and harsh, but you're a loving Father who delights in his children. You're a loving Father who gave his only Son that we might come into relationship with you. You're a loving Father who created us for joy and love, not for harsh treatment. A loving Father who cares for us.